Good morning, and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and joining us today is my old good buddy, Harrison Blair of the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce. Number of amazing summertime events going on in North Texas. HB, how you doing this morning?
Man, Chris Arnold, I'm doing well, and I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much for having us on to tell our story.
Oh, for sure. It is June, and Juneteenth celebrations are continuing through this weekend. Can you talk about some of the activities that have transpired, some of the amazing stories that you've witnessed, in fact, including what the walk with Miss Opal Lee?
Oh, absolutely. Let me just say, Juneteenth is Freedom Day. It's a big deal in the community. And now that it's a national holiday, the activities are going to go throughout the week. The biggest activity was absolutely the walk with Opal Lee. That was how she helped advocate to make sure that this was a national holiday. So to be in her presence, to be in space with all the people at Fair Park, and to be a part of that energy was unmatched. To be with someone that generations upon generations will read about. If there is an America, we will be talking about Miss Opal Lee and her impact. So that was unmatched and amazing.
Yeah, let's talk about this for a second, because she deserves her flowers right now. She started walking. And I think, was she trying to walk to Washington, D.C. for a while?
She was trying to walk to Washington, D.C.
I was like, who in their right mind, if you didn't have to, try to walk halfway across the country? But she was doing it for a purpose. Her purpose was to recognize Juneteenth and let people know that until the slaves in Texas found out that they were free, all the slaves that were, you know, in bondage throughout the Civil War and preceding all that, they were not free. And Opal Lee is from Fort Worth, and she basically put this whole national holiday into motion.
And on top of all of that, Miss Opal Lee is everybody's grandmother, and
yes,
she will tell you to your face. She came to a chamber event in 2022. We were having a cool event at the Arboretum, and it wasn't even about Juneteenth. We were very close to the holiday, and she just showed up. And she asked, could I come and say a few words to the young people? I said, Grandmother Lee, you can talk anytime and as long as you like. Mm-hmm. And she blessed us with a 3-minute speech about all the things that we can do. And it was a room full of entrepreneurs, and it changed our lives. We were inspired. And then on top of it, she had talked to Cent Marshall, who is the CEO of the Dallas Mavericks, the first Black woman to do it. And you saw the impact of her leadership just this year in the finals.
Yes, sir.
So excited about that. And Cent Marshall had talked to Miss Opal Lee, but I don't think they had ever met in person. And at this particular event where Cent was talking about her book and a number of other things, her and Opal Lee met on her way to the stage. And we made a post about it yesterday on the Chamber's page just to talk about a historic hug or historic embrace, because it was so special to see both of them in the same space together and getting to meet each other. But also, Miss Opal Lee really cares about the youth. She cares about the future. Mm-hmm. And even though she knows, you know, we can't live forever, she's leaving those seeds that will plant the shade she may never get to feel. So it is an honor and a privilege to be in that woman's presence.
Yes, absolutely. Can you talk about some more about that particular walk and, you know, paint the picture? Because I think a lot of people were really affected by it and enjoyed it. And it was a wonderful occasion.
So it was a walk that culminated in a big festival in Fair Park proper. And Opal Lee has done this walk for years. But now that it's a national holiday, they bring a bunch of other institutions to also be a part of it. One of the other organizations that does a lot of work across the country is called Heal America. They work with a lot of communities who might experience gang violence. And they have a number of organizations that do all kinds of work. And so Heal America was a big partner and sponsor of this work and of Miss Opal Lee's walk. And of course, it culminated in a speech from the great Opal Lee herself, where she talked about the importance of Juneteenth. And as we were in Fair Park, the other thing that was kind of a full circle moment for me, good brother Arnold, is I've studied the chamber's history, because in this job, you take over the reins of the first Black chamber in America's history. Mm-hmm. There's always some kind of hidden path to it that you didn't know about.
Oh, slow down for a minute here. You said something important a lot of people may not know. Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce was the first Black Chamber of Commerce in the United States.
It is the first Black Chamber of Commerce in the United States. And of course, Chris, as of, you know, as holding that title is really important, The chamber has existed in many iterations. We're almost a 100-year-old organization, and we'll be in 1936. We had a very special president by the name of Antonio Maceo Smith. You may say, well, how does a black man get the name Antonio Maceo? Well, in the early 1800s, a freedom fighter in Cuba named Antonio Maceo. And he had survived so many dangerous battles as a freedom fighter that he became a mythic lord, you know, kind of status symbol in Cuba. And he was known simply as the Bronze Titan. Well, when black families across America start finding out in the black world that there's a man that they call the Bronze Titan, and his name is Antonio Maceo, they named their firstborns Maceo, which is an English cessation of Maceo. And so now they, you know, a Maceo Smith family took the whole name. But that's why, you know, one freedom fighter to another freedom fighter. And as historians look at this period in time, this, oh, can you hear me, Chris?
Yes. Yeah, it's breaking up a little bit. I can hear you. Hang in the Wi-Fi issue.
Okay. Okay, perfect. Let me just make sure I check this before we go on. Okay. But he was a freedom fighter named after another freedom fighter. Mm-hmm. He comes to Dallas at the age of 29 and becomes one of the most important secretaries, or then, you know, they called the presidents and executives secretaries then.
Right.
He became one of the most important secretaries to all the work that we're doing. He had a very short agenda that he wanted to accomplish, and he used the 1936 centennial on Juneteenth to do all these things. The first thing he wanted to do was try to test the system for integration. So he wanted to see if he could make an integrated space at the new exposition, which would be the Hall of Negro Life, which is the precursor to our African-American Museum. And the Hall of Negro Life opens its doors on Juneteenth, 1936. But he knows that Dallas at the time doesn't have any black police officers. So the first thing A. Maceo Smith does is invites the newly organized Texas Black Peace Officers Association to come and lead a parade into the Negro Hall of Life. The second thing is he's a member of the New Negro Movement, which is right out of the Harlem Renaissance while he's in school in New York. So he brings Harlem Renaissance artists.
Wow.
He brings some of the best trap artists like Ralph Metcalf and Jesse Owens. And they come to the Hall of Negro Life and they bring this big integrated crowd. He also is looking to get a new chamber organized. We didn't have a state chamber at the time, so he invites all the existing chambers, many of which he had helped to organize, and he brings them to the centennial celebration. And this is so important because at this big Juneteenth celebration in 1936 in our state fair, he creates the only integrated space that they had. He creates opportunities for black artists, and it's the first major U.S. exposition where we talk about or include all of the things that black people have given to the culture of Texas and the country. So he accomplishes all of this. And for the first time in 1936 at a Juneteenth celebration that's public, nobody is hurt, harmed, or lynched. So that's our little piece of history that's kind of connected. And even though the Hall of Negro Life was torn down immediately following the 1936 centennial for a bunch of reasons, it is the precursor to the African American Museum, and that's where people like Dr. Harry Robinson, who is the leader of the African American Museum today, advocated and built on some of those gains that A. Maceo Smith and other leaders like him brought to bear. But that was one of the first big public Juneteenth celebrations that was safe for African Americans, and we had it right here at our historic Fair Park.
Harrison Blair, you are a heck of a storyteller because you just painted the picture and made this entire walk come full circle, with the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce. It's outstanding the way you're able to do this. And again, we mentioned the walk that happened a couple of days ago with Miss Opal Lee, but there's been other Juneteenth celebrations going on around the North Texas area this in past week, right? Can you talk about some of those?
So the other one that's really cool is something called the Juneteenth Golf Classic. I had a husband and wife entrepreneur team come to me and say, hey, Harrison, we want to really do a great golf tournament. And they came to us, I think, in 2019 and said they wanted to start this tournament. And the Mavericks were the first organization that we reached out to see if we could find some financial help to, you know, pull off this really big golf tournament. And now in its fifth year, the tournament is growing to other cities. But it's right here, and it happens at a black golf course, which is a Oak Cliff Golf Club, Oak Cliff Country Club, rather, which is in Oak Cliff. And it features a lot of different golfers, and it features a black a black Juneteenth Golf Classic jacket that you win. So kind of like the Masters, they crown you.
Yeah.
And then they bring a cake tray full of cash for the winning team. So it is quickly one of the coolest tournaments that is happening here in Dallas. And we had black-owned golf balls. The Renegade Golf Ball was the official golf ball of the Juneteenth Golf Classic. We talked about business, economic revitalization, opportunities. And then the Chamber is a benefiting sponsor. So we are invested in this because every time the Classic is over, we get a check of at least $5,000 to $10,000 that we can give directly to a nonprofit or a business that needs it. So it's an economic development play. We tell people, you know, you're not just coming to play a game of golf. You are coming to play for freedom, and you're coming to help us help serve businesses and nonprofits. So it was a big deal for us, and we really, really enjoyed the Juneteenth Golf Classic yesterday.
It's outstanding because a lot of people realize nowadays that these are opportunities to network, and networking is one of the ways that different organizations, small businesses, larger businesses, corporate America, they get to meet different groups of people or different entrepreneurs and find out what they have in like in mind, right?
So, and that's really what it was about for us yesterday. We told people, you're not just coming to play a game of golf. You're coming to network. You're coming to build relationships. Mm-hmm. And the value of building these relationships, we met these two young black women at a happy hour we did for the Juneteenth Golf Classic the past few years. And one of them was in cosmetics. The other was in like a face cream kind of, you know, cream that you put on your face. Mm-hmm. She was a student at SMU. She was doing $250,000 in revenue, and she was international, but she wanted to have a national audience. The other young lady was making literal makeups and cosmetics, and she had a $10 million business, and she's based in Frisco. She wanted to be able to do international business. So they both had what the other wanted, and over drinking light bites, they figured out that they could maybe make $45 million by the close of business next year. So this is what a networking and a relationship building opportunity can help do. And imagine amplifying that over a great game of golf where you find your people, you find your next partner. So, it was a great game, and we're helping to build community, but also it helps to build business.
Yeah, Juneteenth is exceptional. It's important not just for Texas, but for the United States in general. And again, it's a celebration of the end of slavery. And in a way, I'm trying to represent Juneteenth for people who don't understand it. It may be like, oh, I think people should be more solemn. No, there's a time for the solemn, but there's also a time for celebration. It's almost like New Orleans funeral. That's almost like a celebration of life. You follow me? And so maybe Juneteenth, the celebrations are, guess what? Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last, like Dr. Martin Luther King said. What do you think?
I believe it is absolutely a freedom day, and it's a joyous freedom day.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity for us to talk about as a country how we turn the page on one of the worst times in our history.
Yeah.
And how it wasn't an easy turn. It wasn't completely bloodless. It was a difficult transition as the country. And in a lot of ways, we still hadn't gotten it completely right. But this is a moment where America shines and it stands up for all the values that it has preached and put in every document that we hold sacred and true. We actually pushed to live up to it. And it wasn't just President Lincoln and the Union Army freeing us. A lot of black people self-emancipated. You know, I've talked to enough historians to talk about the fact that we have to remember that enslaved people were just that. They were people. They got news just like everybody else. And if you worked the field and you were running errands and you were making things more comfortable and convenient for this family, how would you and your people not know first what kind of movements were happening with the troops? Or the master of the plantation may have left to go fight and they are not coming back. And then, mm-hmm. You're the one delivering the letters. But some enslaved people could read. So news permeated communities and people learned about these things. And the closer the army got, they may have run. And so by the point the Emancipation Proclamation comes out, it's really catching up to where black people have been in search of freedom. So it's a freedom day in a lot of ways for a lot of reasons. But let me say, it is definitely a huge freedom day celebration, and not just for black Americans, but for all Americans, because the institution impacted all of us.
Exactly. You couldn't have said it better. We're talking with Harrison Blair with the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce. There are other events going on this summer with the Dallas Black Chamber's fingerprints all over. Can you share some of those? Because a lot of people are excited.
So this summer, August 7th, the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce will be hosting our Executive Business Summit, which, among other things, will feature AI. We'll be talking about, you know, the food vertical. So if you're a chef, if you are a caterer, you have a food truck or a brick and mortar and you're looking to expand, we'll have some great conversations with some leaders around that. And just really thinking through infrastructure that different entrepreneurs need to get some of these major contracts that are coming out. You know, we've got the FIFA World Cup coming here in 2026.
That's right.
And one match. Just one match in the World Cup, Chris, is like a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
We're going to get leave somewhere between 6 and 9 of them. Mm. So getting businesses ready for that kind of impact to the entire region. It's a big job. And even though it's going to be some years before the tournament happens, we want to help businesses dig their well before they, you know, get thirsty. So we're working on a number of programs that this particular event is going to discuss. And then in the middle of our Executive Business Summit, we have our Quest for Success, the very same day. And we take a break and we come in and we actually award some businesses and nonprofits who are not only out here making great revenues and profits, but they are lifting as they climb. And this has been an award that we've given since 1985. So it's a precursor to your 40 Under 40s and your Business Journal Awards. This is something that Thomas L. Houston, the president in 1985, really came up with. And if you win this award, it's not just a great award that gives you word of mouth. You get news coverage from a lot of our partners. You get a lot of news coverage from different chambers and different newsletters. So they see a bump in revenue of about 15% over 4 years after receiving this award. So it's pretty significant. So it's a program slash event. So and last year's speaker was Benjamin Crump. This year's speaker is still being worked out. So we don't want to say it too soon, but you definitely won't want to miss it because the entire lineup is quite great. So we're excited about that. And we'll be hosting this event at UNT Dallas, August 7th. So we hope to see folks there. And then finally, at the end of the year, we always have a themed event. And of course, we are from the great state of Texas. So it'll have something to do with cowboy couture. So we'll be putting some details out about that. And that'll be a lot of fun this coming
See, you say that. You say that. Let's go ahead and give Beyonce her props.
So, and Chris, I'll say this. I said that we were going to do something, you know, in the Western space. I said this just before she dropped Cowboy Carter.
Look out.
And people were calling me crazy. But now, because of the Queen, I'm clairvoyant. So we will accept that. Thank you, Queen B. We appreciate that.
I mean, this is it's perfect timing. It's like ironic and the whole nine yards. And for people who don't even know, and they say, well, Beyonce, she's going into country music. Beyonce and Destiny's Child, they were playing rodeos when they were teenagers. They were doing the national anthem, Star Spangled Banner. They were doing their songs at rodeos. And everybody knows in Texas, you got to be touched to have some cowboy culture. I mean, everybody has it.
It's the way. And in fact, Chris, I have on a suit, a tie, and I got on some boots. So in Texas, we're not just talking to you about
that's right.
being suited and booted. We get suited and booted.
That's so, right. And then we go
and
do some boot scooting.
Right.
And then we go do some boot scooting. We sure do.
We do the boot scoot. And you hit it on the head. Destiny's Child had always been in spaces like that. They've always been talking about things that we would consider country.
Exactly.
And they're from Texas. Mm-hmm. You know, you might ride a horse in the middle of Houston. I went to Prairie View, and you might hear cows mooing outside your dorm room. Mm-hmm. So the thought that you can divorce Black people from country music, the very instruments that make country and early country what it is,
exactly.
is they are from Black culture.
Exactly. Including the banjo. Yep.
The banjo is an African instrument. So all to say, she's only returning to her roots or getting deeper in them, rather. Thank you for pointing that out, Dr. Arnold.
Oh, yeah. And there's another one. Here's another one. She's not the first, quote unquote, superstar. Way back in the Black superstar to do country music. Ray Charles was doing country albums. And we already know the late, great Charlie Pride, who grew up here or lived here in Dallas and part owner of the Texas Rangers. He is a country music legend.
Man, kiss an angel good morning. look, I go on.
Yeah, and told, love look, him like a devil when you get back home.
and let me say that I got to sit next to the great Charlie Pride at the Chamber event in 2017, mm-hmm. and he was one of the most humble guys. And Chris, I didn't know this until I looked closely at a jersey that we gave to a museum that my grandfather had. A bunch of Negro League players had signed this jersey, and I looked closely at it, and I kept. Then I had to ask someone, does that say Charlie Pride? And of course, I did my history and my research. Charlie Pride was also a Negro Leaguer.
Yes, he
so
was.
So this man is an American legend.
He really American was. Legend. A living legend. Again, unfortunately, he lost his life to COVID a few years ago. But yeah, I would see him all the time out at Ranger games and Maverick games. But he would always go to Texas Ranger spring training. He'd always want to go out there and hit the baseball. And again, he was a part owner of the team. And he and the late, great Comer Cottrell, they were doing a lot of great things with the Texas Rangers. And again, Charlie Pride was a country music legend. In fact, one of the last appearances he ever made before he passed away was at the Country Music Awards. And again, Beyonce, she's just doing a part of her chapter in her career. It's just another facet of the things that she does. And she's Texas owned. At the same time, we're talking about a little North Texas stuff. We're talking about the, are you calling it the DAP? Is that what you're calling the event?
The event that we had for it's going to be called the Executive Business Summit, and then we're going to have another called the Quest for Success. That's a luncheon that will happen in the middle of the summit. Now there is a program, Chris, that is happening right now called the DAP. It's called the Dallas Accelerator Program.
That's and what I was getting into. Yeah, go ahead.
So this program is really cool because it is a partnership with the City of Dallas, the Greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and the BCL of Texas, which is a funding institution that's not a bank. So it's outside of your traditional funding sources. And we've partnered to really work with the city to help really expand and scale businesses. So we have a number of companies in the community that you go to. It may be a burger joint or a space that provides some kind of service. Mm-hmm. And you wonder, why aren't there more of these around the city? This place has been in 20 years. It's a community, cornerstone. Or there may be a new startup that's doing $250,000 in revenue or more, but they can't seem to get to that next level. This programming is designed to help those businesses. It has official curriculum attached to it, but what really makes it unique is, one, you've got to apply to be a part of it. And the first requirement is you got to have at least 2 to 3 years in business. Mm-hmm. So we want you to have some experience because we want you to bring that experience to other cohort members. You've got to have at least $250,000 in revenue that you can show over that an annual period, because we want to help businesses that are in a certain space and ready to scale, because this program is designed to help create jobs and to help scale these businesses, because a part of the chamber's mission is helping create generational wealth. And then the city wants us to help create prime contractors, and to do that in different industries and spaces, I'm sure that the best of the best comes from every community in Dallas, and God dispersed his great talent among all his people.
Yeah.
So that means that there's some of the best contractors are going to be at the Hispanic Chamber, or they'll be in the Rolodex of the BCL of Texas. So, and we certainly have some of the best here at the Dallas Black Chamber. So I want our members and the cohort members to get the best of and make the best primes that can get the biggest contracts. So we've made this program. The first cohort is almost over. And in fact, they graduate also on August the 7th. So cohort 2 is about to start here shortly, and it's going to be even more compressed. Well, what makes this program different and unique to other accelerators is I found that most businesses don't have time, or nonprofits don't have time, to sit in the classroom. Mm-hmm. But they will call us for technical assistance, meaning that, when they need a consultant to, help them figure out how they merge with another business or buy it. Or if they need an accountant to look at those, forensic accounting, methods to see, is this firm good to buy? Do I want to really engage? Mm-hmm. Or what do I do to hire and acquire for this next level of growth? This program helps them do that. We cut the red tape on you having to go figure out, your consultant on your own, or figure out how you're going to scale and grow on your own, or where your next funding source comes from. We have consultants that's all we do is we come in and we help businesses scale and grow. And if we got to pay for you to scale and grow, we got to buy the results, we are not above that. So it's a fun program, and we're seeing a lot of success from the businesses who are actually in the cohort today.
Every time I talk to you, Harrison, I always find out new things, and you are such a source of information, a wealth of information, as a matter of fact. And I'm looking over your mission again with the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce, and it says what you do, and I'm going to read it to everybody because it says what you do so well, but you are such innovative connector. Let me just say this way. The Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce serves as an advocate for the creation, growth, and general welfare of Black-owned businesses and organizations across North Texas. The Chamber actively promotes the expansion of business opportunities on behalf of its membership through referrals, partnerships, seminars, technical assistance, you just mentioned the technical, and marketing. The chamber focuses on economic impact, economic development, education, convention slash tourism, and special projects. It says the facts that you do. Again, you're like the ultimate connector, especially when you got so many new businesses and corporations and people moving to the North Texas area every single month.
Man, and Dr. Arnold, let me say the exciting part about a mission like that is it's been that way for the almost 100 years.
Isn't that something?
It's a huge thing. It's a big responsibility also, because there are leaders who put this thing in place. People like Antonio Maceo Smith, who, when I started this job, I found a 9-page guide in the library on the 7th floor for anybody who's interested in the Eric Johnson Library. Mm-hmm. And he wrote this 9-page guide for anybody at the time who wanted to start a Negro Chamber of Commerce. And interestingly enough, this is another one of the things that actually came out of the 1936 centennial meeting. When he was bringing all these different folks in to really see his agenda through, he was writing this guide. And he knew somebody like me would come along in the future, and I'd have a bunch of questions about what a chamber does, and let alone what a black chamber does. And he wrote it out so eloquently. And the guide says that for anyone who wants to know how to start a Negro chamber, here is your bylaw set. Here is your constitution. Here are some programs that you can use just to get started to raise money. Now, sure, it's from 1938, so some of it needed some updating. But we were able to use that plan looking back to really see where we want to go in the future. And this man was prolific for so many reasons. And this mission statement that you read, a lot of that infrastructure comes from him. Maceo Smith saw our chamber as a clearinghouse that really looks at everything that impacts black families. So if it touches communities that we serve, then we should have some kind of voice or advocacy in that. And then we changed one small feature. We said black-owned businesses and organizations, because in 2021, we grew rapidly just with nonprofits. Mm-hmm. I think we grew some 38% just with nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And another statistic, Chris, that is jumping off the page at everybody right now is that black women have changed the face of business.
Yes.
Black women are the number one startups across most demographics in the state of Texas, and certainly across the country. They have taken form and shape. And now when we talk about black leadership or leadership across companies anywhere, we have to be talking about black women and their impact and the way that they do business, which is, it's an amazing thing. You know, it's easy to find people to award because so many black women-owned businesses and nonprofits are really doing that work for hard-to-reach communities and hard-to-serve communities. So we're honored to serve and do this work, carry out that mission.
Oh, yeah. You are a great advocate for all of these things, and especially, like you said, black women in particular, because they are the growth and they are the backbone. With that being said, you mentioned, you know, all the different fingerprints that the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce has their fingers on. And you mentioned the World Cup just a little while ago. World Cup's going to be headed to the North Texas area in Arlington and AT&T Stadium in a few years. But this summer, at Globe Life Field in Arlington, you have the Major League Baseball All-Star Weekend and some of those festivities. Is the Black Chamber involved in that at all? Because I do know that they have the Ken Griffey Jr. Swingman Classic, which is an all-star game consisting of HBCU players.
So the Rangers have definitely reached out to us to be engaged, and we are finding ways that we can create impact. So in short, yes, and will we be there to see HBCUs get it in? Absolutely. Any kind of major sporting event that features students from community that we can be a part of, really any students. We love the kids. We love seeing the future. And if they have especially any kind of business exploits they want to get into, we don't treat students like, you know, interns only. If you got a product that can go to market, we also work with students, because I've met a lot of entrepreneurs and, you know, the gene usually rubs off on the kids too. They have ideas, and we treat those ideas like they're valuable. So this is that kind of space. And so anytime we can work with you, and the Rangers doing a great job of that, we'll do that. We'll definitely be out there. And I got a pair of Ken Griffey Jr.'s the gloves that I need him to sign. So I'd be excited to see
you. You got to get it all done. You got to get it all in. And you mentioned younger, not just students, but people who are, you know, under the age of 30 and how they want to connect and how they want to impact communities, and whether it's nonprofits or whether it's individual entrepreneurs and businesses. There's a lot of people in that age demo, Gen Z, who are content creators. I've already, over the years, given you lots of props on the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce website. It's virtually, I mean, it's like you can stay there all day and just get lost on it. There's so much wonderful information on there, and it's presented in such a great way, and it's used in so many different ways, including interactive activities. Can you talk about some of the opportunities that the Dallas Black Chamber might have for quote unquote content creators or people who think outside of the box, maybe under the age of 30?
So the first big thing is figuring out, you know, one, all the content that we have now that you see kind of going across our social media and our newsletters, mm-hmm. those are all done by young people. And we specifically started to see that corporations are putting a lot of funding into using these influencers to make things happen at all ages.
Yep.
And influencers we found come in all shapes and sizes. They come from everywhere. So we started to work with influencers. We even have an influencer who's now a board member, and she's helped us to really get up to speed about how to engage with influencers, what kinds of programs we should be running. And then we're couched right here in South Dallas next to Lincoln High School, which has among other things, a communications institute. So they work with a lot of technology for communications. And people who are doing public speaking or podcasts. So we're trying to get some students to help us do that work right now. So anytime we can find a program and we can help young people help us, they usually know how to work all the new technology. And Chris, I don't know if you've gotten on TikTok. I'm not a TikToker. I am an old school millennial. Mm-hmm. So I had students show me how to work TikTok, how to, you know, cut the sounds up and down and what to do with it. Hopefully the government lets us keep it. But you know, those kinds of platforms and that kind of approach is what the market is asking for. So we work with a lot of young people because they have a lot of great ideas and they see the world differently than we do.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though they may be in our family, they may be your niece and nephew or your daughter or son, but they were raised one way, but they now are prepared for this new world that they inhabit. They understand it much better than us. And they help us keep up. And don't even get me started on AI. We haven't even really gotten our website fully completed with all these new upgrades. And AI is going to be a major feature of it, how you engage with the website and how it interacts with all the different services that you might want or need. So there's a lot that's going to happen. And young people are at they're the centerpiece of how we're going to do that.
I love the way you're embracing AI as not as being afraid of it. It's like, okay, we're going to harness it. We're going to figure out how to utilize this and maximize it. In other words, you're not being afraid of something you don't know because you're learning about it and you're saying, wait a minute, if we don't understand it, we're going to get left behind.
Exactly. And you know, a lot of it is, you know, people have all these existential questions about artificial intelligence. But what I think is that's the government's job and we need to be advocating on that, you know. But if it's going to turn into Skynet and do something terrible to us, then the government's got some things they got to figure out with, you know, these private, privateers who are making these different apps. But also, you got to be worried about if your neighbor is using it. Mm-hmm. And if they're using it and they're pulling out more efficiencies than you, will you be in business soon if they really figure out how to edge this thing and really get, you know, useful with staff? The other thing that's critical here is that I think humans are so worried about this transition to artificial intelligence and the amount of jobs that it's going to take. And I just want to point out that in every iteration of society, some new technology was going to take away this thing or take away that thing or this
right.
job or that occupation. And we always find a way because humans are creative.
Exactly.
And some of the menial jobs that this thing is going to take away, not so bad. You know, if you know, we can find collaborative ways. And for the workforce crunch that we have right now, I can guarantee there are a lot of small companies that absolutely would love to have some of the talent that's out there on the market. And they can afford to pay them really nice salaries with benefits. And we're working with a lot of those companies. They need access to some of these employees, and they're stuck working a 9-to-5 at a fast food place. And that's not, you know, that's not a terrible job if you can get it and it's helping you provide for your family. But if AI takes that away and now we have to find more creative uses for human labor and talent, then I believe humans will meet that challenge.
Harrison Blair, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Before we let you get out of here, is there anything else you want to let people know or where they can find out more information, how they can partner with you, volunteer, the whole nine yards?
The final thing is that the chamber just opened a brand new office with in partnership with Vista Bank. We are, I think, maybe the first chamber bank combo that we know of. And I'll say, what's better than a burger joint in a gas station? A chamber and a bank. Can't beat it. You get like everything you need here. And we've got coffee. So, boom. Come visit us here. We're right here off MLK and Robert B. Cullum, Vista Bank. You won't miss us when you pass the MLK train station. And then from there, if there's anyone who listens to this show who says, hey, I want to get involved with a chamber like the Black Chamber, but I'm not Black, you know, that's okay. This is, if you understand that Black means American and that you like to help neighbors be strong so that we can all be strengthened and that everybody can really share in that American dream, then help us serve more businesses. Visit us at dbcc.org or give us a call at 214-702-6652 and let us know what your interests are. And if there's a way you can give us some sweat equity or some cash, you know, to help us serve our mission, we'd love to work with you.
Harrison Blair, it's always a pleasure. We'll be talking again real soon. Harrison Blair with the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce. Thanks, HB.
Chris Arnold, the pleasure and the honor is mine, sir. Thank you.
And joining us right now is Ms. Stephanie Duck. She's with AFSP, the American Association for Suicide Prevention. She's going to talk a little bit about saving lives and bringing hope to those affected by suicide. Stephanie, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Let's talk about the walk that's about to happen, because all it is you're sharing and putting light on a topic that affects a whole lot of families, a whole lot of organizations. And sometimes it's uncomfortable, but it needs to be talked about because it can help prevent suicide. Are we talking about the overnight walk? Is that one of the walks? Because you guys do so many great walks.
We do a lot of walks. And so, no, we're not doing the overnight here in Dallas this year. We did do that a couple years ago. It's hosted this year in Boston. That's actually coming up this weekend for those who are interested in tuning in Boston. However, we're here to talk about just the DFW Metro Walk. And so this walk is going to take place this fall. It's going to be on October 26th. At the Lovett Pavilion in Arlington, Texas. Mm-hmm. So this is the largest walk that we put on within the North Texas region. And I think last year we had about 2,000 participants who raised over $200,000, all which is going towards helping save lives and the research that we're doing at AFSP. So for more information about the walk specifically, you can go to afsp.org/DFW.
Hey, Steph, you know, I think the idea of walks is very therapeutic. What were some of the ideas behind creating the walks? Because I think when people talk about mental wellness, it's like, well, people just need to talk. There's a lot of things going on in people's heads that gets them depressed or makes them overthink certain situations. Was that part of the reasoning that, you know, you guys came up with walks? Because I think that's a way of talking with a lot of people.
Yeah, so I think one thing that the walks really do is bring hope, and that's part of our mission. So we want to save lives and we want to bring hope to those affected by suicide. And so by having a space where people can come together and gather in community with a shared experience or a shared drive for preventing suicide, I think people can really gain a lot from it. Walks are also just very present in the community, and mm-hmm. so that's how I actually found American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Was I heard about a walk on Facebook and I showed up one morning, and that was in 2019, and I've been volunteering with the organization since. So I think, one, it provides community, two, it brings hope, and it really just brings in people to the organization and allows them to feel like they're giving back.
Exactly. And I think it's very important for those who feel like they want to give back, but it's also important for a lot of people to empathize. You know, it's like, okay, I can give back, but also I can show how much I care. And then they wind up talking about some situations that may have happened in their families or individuals that they know. Can you talk about how people come together and how AFSP has been able to unite a lot of people or allow people to find strength together?
It really does. And one thing that we do with the walks that I think is unique to this organization is We do a bead ceremony. And so when you first arrive to the walk, you check in and there's booths and resources and things like that set up. There's music going, there's different activities for kids, things like that. But we also have a bead section. And so in the bead section, you go and there's like a list of the different colors of beads and what they mean and what they mean is going to be about your connection to suicide or to mental health. And so you pick the beads that you feel represent you, and then you get to wear them. And so as you're walking around the morning of a walk, you get to see everyone else who you instantly have this shared connection because you're wearing blue beads and you see somebody else is wearing blue beads. And so it opens up this lane for conversation and ability to share your story with that. And then once we kick off the walk, we have like a little welcome ceremony and we have different people speak in that. And we do the bead ceremony where we have somebody from the community representing each of the colors, and we share a little bit about each person's story and just really give space for those people. And I think that is such a unique way to kind of honor people's loved ones as well as just like make people feel seen in that moment.
You mentioned the different colors of the bees. Can you talk about the colors and what they represent?
Yeah.
You mentioned just the blue. I'd like to hear about all of them.
Definitely, definitely. So we've got a lot of colors, and I'll try not to miss any here, but we've got the like dark blue, which is going to be just kind of the general mental health, suicide prevention. You're just kind of you're there, you're supporting the cause for AFSP. You've got purple, which is going to represent the loss of a family member or a friend. You have silver, which is the loss of someone within the military. Red is going to be your spouse. So if you've lost a spouse to suicide, then that would be the color you would grab. Orange, I believe, is the loss of a sibling, so brother or sister. And then white is going to be the loss of a child. Teal is going to represent supporting somebody who has struggled in the past. And green is going to be that like personal connection that you have struggled with suicidal ideation, whether you've had an attempt before or not. And lastly, our newest one that we recently added is a rainbow colored bead just supporting LGBTQ plus, since we know that that's a community that really has a higher risk of suicide.
Yeah. And you mentioned all the different colors. And like I said, I love the quote unquote strategy of how I can actually bring people together and have a commonality of something to talk about and how they share and actually, you know, help each other out. With that being said, I also noticed that you have so many different kinds of walks. I mean, it's the series of the out of the darkness walks, but you have community walks, you have campus walks, you have the overnight walk. Can you talk about like the campus walks? I'm sure that's on college campuses and high schools because ironically, what I've heard, and I've talked to a lot of different people on this show, is there were a lot of teenagers in college students who were affected by suicide or decided to take their own lives going through the pandemic. In other words, they just thought it was going to be, they didn't know what the future would bring, or it just heightened some things for them, or they were feeling isolated. Can you talk about some of the campus walks and how those have kind of helped change some lives and help bring people together who are affected by a friend or a classmate or a roommate that may have taken their life?
Of course. So first we'll start with kind of the difference between the three sets of walks that you just mentioned. So you've got the overnight hosted once a year in one location. As mentioned earlier, that one's in Boston. And then we've got the community walks that are going to take place in the fall. And then we have our campus walks that are in the spring. And so like you said, you hit it right on the head. It is campus walks are going to be for like high school places or campuses that want to host. And it's really a way for us to kind of get connected with the school. Typically, it's going to be hosted at a school, so you might walk around like the outside of it. This past spring, I actually went to the Keller ISD walk. And so it was held at one of the Keller high schools. And we got to see a whole bunch of families come out and students come out, parents come out. And I think it was a really great opportunity for that community to come together. It has the same effect as a community walk, although it's a smaller scale, and it's these people that have a shared interest in that they're going to school currently. And I know at that walk, there were a lot of families who unfortunately have lost a student to suicide in the recent years. And talking to them and hearing their stories, they just want information to be out there. They want more knowledge to be known. I think kids can kind of shy away from wanting to talk to an adult or telling an adult something that might be off or wrong. And so, really getting the resources into these kids' hands, I think, is pivotal to lowering the suicide risk amongst adolescents.
Have you noticed the adolescence? I don't want to say it's just the suicide rate was spiking, but have you noticed any difference since the pandemic ended? Because maybe people are feeling more hopeful now, or is it still about the same? I don't have the same information that you have, but I was just kind of curious about it.
That's a great question, and I'm not actually 100% on the answer, so I don't want to say something that would be false here. What we do know, though, is that suicide is a complex health crisis that is going on, and it stems from multiple risk factors kind of converging at one time. And so, although the pandemic played a factor in that, like the pandemic itself wouldn't have just caused like a mass increase in suicide. And so, I think really coming out of the pandemic, if anything, it's like that would be one risk factor that has kind of been removed from people.
You know, when someone loses someone in their family or friends, or, you know, even someone famous said, "Wow, I didn't know that they were feeling bad and or suicidal, or it was that they were feeling that bad. They were internalizing so much." Can you talk about some of the things that, you know, since you've been a part of AFSP, that people are, I guess the best way to put it is like how they were able to share their grief and learn signs that someone may be feeling or down and maybe slipping, or because sometimes it's like, wow, this is so out of the blue.
Yeah, so first I want to acknowledge that when losing somebody to suicide, it's a different kind of pain, it's a different kind of grief that you go through. I think there's a lot of questions that come back of, well, why them? They seem so happy, and well, they had this one thing going on. And so just wanting to reiterate that it's never just one thing. There might be one thing that you see on the surface of maybe somebody just lost their job, or they just got a divorce. But really, it's like that converging with like maybe some biological factors of like a history of suicide in the family, or depression, or mental illness. Things like that can be something that could compound to lead somebody to taking their life. But I would encourage people to look for warning signs. And really, those are going to be things of people acting differently than they normally do. So if, let's say, I'm normally pretty like mellowed out, and then all of a sudden I change my mood and I am super happy or something like that, that is actually a cause for concern because it's different from somebody's normal like state.
Interesting.
And so
Interesting. I'm
looking
glad you brought
for,
that up. I find that
yeah.
interesting because a lot of people would normally think, well, if she starts getting angry out of nowhere, she's normally mellow, she's chill, but all of a sudden she's angry. And you're like, wait a minute, she's suddenly very happy. And that's a different sign. And that could be an indicator.
Yeah. So what research has shown is somebody who does go from like maybe like a depressive state to suddenly really happy. The fear there is that they've decided on a plan and have decided that they're taking their life. And because of that, it's like this weight that has lifted off of them. And so it's just really important to check in. And some other warning signs that we see with people, if all of a sudden they're starting to withdraw, or they're getting really irritable, or they've got that low mood or irritability, lack of interest, maybe they have changes in sleep or appetite, maybe their work quality is going down, they've got low energy, they're expressing feelings of like worthlessness, or they're failing, maybe they were humiliated, things like that. Mm-hmm. Really anything that's different from the norm is important to just address. And if you're concerned about somebody, just ask. I know that there is stigma around, well, if I say the word suicide, then I'm going to put it in their head. And that's not, research has shown, like, that is not at all how it happens. They actually show that, like, talking about suicide lets people open up and feel comfortable to share how they're really feeling, and mm-hmm. they feel seen. And so sometimes it can, like, snap them out of the mood that they're in. And so it's really important to just address that directly.
Have you ever talked to, because I'm sure you talked to a lot of different people, but have you ever talked to different people and you could see the different signs and you personally were able to help someone? I was wondering if there was a personal story that you might share. If not, you can keep it to yourself. But I was just wondering, because I think you're such a good person to listen to because you seem so even.
I really appreciate that. No, I've gone through a lot of training, so I am certified actually in suicide first aid. And so stepping into those heated moments and trying to talk people down to that cool calm.
Mm-hmm.
I think one example I can share is, and this is where I kind of got involved with AFSP and where I found my interest for mental health and really advocating for that. But college, like you mentioned earlier, college can be a really challenging time in somebody's life, between the stress of school and grades and what are you going to do after college and things like that, not to mention just the community you're in and what's going on like a social level. And so mm-hmm. in college for me, my roommates and I all had some struggles with our mental health at times. And I had one roommate where the two of us would kind of go back and forth with calling each other out on it. And so I remember on multiple occasions of it just being like, hey, things seem off. Like, are you having thoughts of ending your life? And every single time that that comment came up, it was like a snap back into reality of like, actually, I am right now. Or actually, no, I'm not. Like, I think I'm good. But just being honest with those conversations. And then when the answer was like, yeah, actually I am. Then it's like, okay, like, what are we going to do tonight? Like, let's sit, let's be together. Let's not leave this person alone.
Mm-hmm.
Let's watch a movie. Let's do something that's going to get the moment back to like that cool calm that I mentioned earlier, and get them through that moment, because thoughts of suicide come in waves. And so what research has shown is that really putting time and distance between those thoughts is how you can help save lives. And so really just sitting with somebody in those moments can save their life.
Oh, that's excellent advice. And it's an excellent message. Again, we're talking with Stephanie Duck. She's with the AFSP. And one of the things you guys are always trying to make sure people are aware of what's going on, raising awareness, and also much needed funds. You're always trying to make sure that you have the capability, you know, financially to actually impact some lives, impact some people's lives who have lost somebody important through suicide. Or maybe, like you just mentioned, spend enough time with someone who might be contemplating suicide. Can you talk about how AFSP as an organization has been able to raise some of these funds, or beyond the walks, but also affect some of the lives?
Yeah. So fundraising is a really big key to any nonprofit to be able to do what they do. And AFSP is no different with that. So Walks is a big place where we get money. We have a lot of organizations that will put on different events, and then the money that they raise, they'll donate it to us. But what we do with that money is really, really important. And so it feeds research. AFSP is the number one suicide research funder in the world. And so it's really important that we have funds to be able to pay our researchers so that they can make these leaps and bounds in suicide prevention. So research is number one. Number two is going to be programs. So we offer a wide variety of programs, and we offer it free of charge, mostly. Most things we offer free of charge to the community. And so by us raising money, we're able to put on these programs for free. And those programs are suicide prevention and information about suicide, getting into schools and college campuses and workplace settings, and talking to veterans and all sorts of different communities that need to hear this message and need to hear the resources. Funds help us be able to put on these programs in the community. And then we also advocate. So advocacy is a huge part of AFSP as well. So I think it was about 2 weeks ago, maybe last week, we actually sent three people from every chapter in the U.S. So that's, I think, 74 chapters now, sent three people to Washington, D.C. to go advocate for different bills that are currently sitting in Congress that deal with mental health and suicide prevention. And having funds help us send people to go advocate and get things moved along. One example would be 988. So this is a resource that was launched a couple of years ago, and it's free crisis support. You can text it or call it at any time, and somebody's going to answer that line and talk to you anonymously. No one's going to show up at your house, be honest with them, and they're there to help you. And so by us raising funds, we were able to help advocate and get that put into place.
That's awesome. And for those who are unfamiliar with it, 988 is a version of 911. Everybody knows about 911, emergency 911. Well, when it comes to mental health awareness and suicide prevention, 988, those three numbers, those three digits can actually save some lives and actually help people cope, because they can actually talk to someone and have someone listen. They can listen and they can learn. And I guess the number one message for AFSP is that suicide can be prevented, and we just have to share information and be there for each other, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And 988, I think some people, or questions I often get around 988 is, well, if I text it, are they, like, for a student, let's say, they're nervous that if they text it, that their parents are going to find out.
Right.
That's not true. 988 is completely anonymous. No one's showing up at your door. They're there to talk you down from that heated moment, to get you to that cool calm. And 988 can also be used if you're worried about somebody and you don't know what to do, or you don't know how to have that conversation. You can also text or call 988, and they're there to help you through how to help somebody else in a crisis. So, yep, like you said, 911 for physical emergencies and 988 for mental emergencies.
Stephanie, before we let you get out of here, can you remind everybody about the weekend of the walk, and also the website where they can find more information on everything and how they might be able to, you know, donate, partner, or even volunteer with AFSP?
Absolutely. So our DFW Metro Walk is going to be hosted at the Levitt Pavilion in Arlington, Texas on October 26th this year. You can find out more information about the walk at afsp.org/DFW. For more information about AFSP in general and our chapter and the programs we have going on, or how to get involved with us, you can find out that at afsp.org/North Texas.
And for those who don't know, AFSP stands for, it's the American Association for Suicide Prevention. Stephanie, again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And thank you all for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.